Good morning, honey. Thought we said goodbye last night. I tossed and turned until it seemed you had gone. But here you are with the dawn.
Wish I'd forget you, but you're here to stay. It seems I met you when my love went away. Now every day I start by saying to you, good morning, heartache. What's new?
Stop haunting me now. I can't shake you no more.
Just leave. See, I've got those Monday blues, straight through Sunday blues.
Good morning, heartache. Here we go again.
Good morning, heartache. You're the one. Just leave me alone.
I've got those Monday blues, straight through Sunday blues.
Good morning, heartache. Here we go again.
Good morning. You're the one who knew me well.
Might as well get used to you
hanging around. Good morning, heartache. Sit down.
Good morning, heartache. Sit down.
There we go. Now it's on. Okay. Good evening. It's 6:04, and I'm now going to call this meeting to order. We will start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So we'll have a roll call, please.
Chair Gray is here. Vice Chair Freeman is present. Chair Goodman, Commissioner Goodman is here. Commissioner Peck is here. Commissioner Murr is absent.
Thank you, Janet. We will start with meeting minutes of February 3rd. Are there any questions, comments, amendments that we would like to have reflected? Seeing none, do I have a motion to approve the meeting minutes?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, do we want to do a roll call vote? Thank you. So we have Commissioner Peck and Commissioner Goodman first and second. And do we want to do a roll call or do you just want to? No. Okay, so all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? It is unanimous. We will now go to presentations. Seeing that we have no public comment, we can go to item B. B1 is Director Gray's report, and you can commence whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Okay. So let's see. In January, we circulated 49,186. Sorry. Forgot to put it up on the screen. There we go. We circulated 49,186 items in January. It was a decrease of 1.6% from last January when we actually circulated exactly 50,000 items. We had 24,638 visitors, which was an increase over last January's 22,563. 5,816 items were borrowed from other libraries. The Goleta Valley Library loaned 4,561 items to patrons from other libraries. We conducted one outreach event with a total of 55 contacts, and 70 programs were conducted at the library with an attendance of 1,733. We have a grant this year, a Book to Action grant. The focus of the grant is the book Strays, by Britt Collins, who lives in the UK, but sometimes travels to California. We will have many programs featuring pets, shelter adoptions, and compassion toward animals. We'll be hosting three adoption events at the library in May and June, but between now and the end of June, we'll be hosting a great many programs for children and adults based on these themes. We'll have a book discussion based on the book, and a great highlight will be when the author comes to give a presentation at the library. We have approximately 80 copies of the book in circulation, and they're all checked out. So we're hopeful that we'll have a lively book discussion.
I bought the book, and I will read it next.
It's a quick read. I recommend it, and it's moving. So three new self-check machines were purchased from and installed by Biblioteca. They're much more compact and user-friendly than our very outdated older machines. We are having some issues with getting them to communicate properly with Polaris, but we're working those out. It was our first time to purchase e-audiobooks for the Black Gold Cooperative Library System. Each of the seven jurisdictions takes responsibility for purchasing three distinct types of collections each year. So our next time to do this will be this month when we will be purchasing children's e-books and e-audio titles. It was a lot of fun to learn how to do it. I attended the annual Friends meeting and thanked them for their extremely generous support in this past year.
Can you just illuminate us on what the Friends did this past year in terms of their support?
Sure. We're in the process of replacing all staff and public computers, which I think came to a total of about 36 machines. They funded all of that, including the Microsoft licenses and then also the licensing system that we use for making reservations to get a spot to use the computer. They funded all children's programs where we hire performers to come. They funded the summer reading club. They fund many adult programs as well, like the Winter Reading Club. They helped us out with several databases. Basically, whatever we ask them for, they give us. They're phenomenal. And in addition to all of that, they give us $48,000 a year to use as we wish.
Thank you.
Data collected throughout 2019 through Harwood Conversations, Community Asks, and Surveys was transferred into a spreadsheet organized by subject, including age of respondent and site of the contact, and a narrative of the findings has been produced, which we will be talking about in a little bit later. And significant progress was made on the 2020 Library Department Work Plan. This document summarizes all the work done by Goleta Valley Library staff to run its library, as well as the work done by GVL staff to help administer the branches. And then shows how many staff members perhaps were lacking.
So is this a prospective document? Does it provide any sort of thoughts or recommendations in moving forward through a particular time horizon?
Yes, this each department in the city produces a work plan every year, and then it goes in front of the city council.
So it's just an annual work plan?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's the end of my report. You have the budget, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you have on the budget.
Great, thank you. Are there questions? So this is the city budget, correct? And this this will move forward for a city decision-making process?
This is the library's budget?
Correct, but yes. It goes to the city for adoption.
This is this year's current budget.
Okay, okay.
So it has already been adopted.
Okay.
We're actually in the process of working on the next year's budget, which mm-hmm. actually has already been adopted, but we're looking at where maybe it needs additions or subtractions.
Okay.
So we're going through the budget process for 2021 right now.
Commissioner Goodman?
Yeah, I notice you're a little behind on your revenues for this time of year, and a little probably right on the money for your supplies and services, maybe slightly behind on salaries since it's through 131. Is this, do you have concerns about making your income this year, or is it this just a timing thing?
I think that we will probably be a little bit behind in some of the revenue categories, for example, fines and fees, because of the changes in the black gold system, where they increased the automatic renewals to 5 automatic renewals. So it's greatly lessened the amount of income that we take in fines and fees. So we're expecting much less revenue from that category than originally anticipated. There was, in terms of the Friends, this year they're actually only giving $24,000 instead of the $48,000 because last calendar year, they run on a calendar year budget, okay. And last calendar year they helped with the renovation of the Jake Boisel room at the library, which ended up being quite an expensive project. So they felt that they had given as much as they could for that calendar year. So we will not be getting the $48,000 this year. So we will be seeing less anticipated revenue.
Well, then that begs the question. How are we going to make up that revenue? What are the thoughts on filling that gap?
We do have a reserve fund. We try not to use it, but we are looking at other categories and seeing where we can perhaps save some money there. But we're always looking at the budget and trying to balance it out.
So are there opportunities for other fundraising activities and opportunities to gather income in other ways?
Probably not realistically for this fiscal year.
Okay, but is this sort of prognosticated to continue in terms of some of these budget shortfalls, and there should there be a long-term plan to maybe fill some of this in the future years?
It's certainly informing us right now as we work on the 2021 budget.
Okay, questions, comments? Okay, seeing none, we will go on to item B2, which is the Harvard report.
Okay, in the summer of 2018, the city of Goleta received a Harwood grant through the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation to gather data and assess the library service needs in the area served by the Goleta Valley Library, which includes the Isla Vista community. The Harwood Institute is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that equips people, organizations, communities, and networks with the tools to bridge divides, build capacity, and tackle shared challenges. For the past 30 years, the Harwood Institute has enabled communities in all 50 states and in 40 countries to become a collective force for change. The Harwood approach is a well-known national tool for gathering data about the public's aspirations for its community. Using a set of 10 predetermined questions, staff facilitate Harwood conversations among community groups in order to discover the topics and concerns that are of primary interest in the community. If groups cannot gather for a conversation, 4 community ask questions are used instead. Staff gathers data across all segments of the community population, assesses which issues garner the most conversation, and then recommends options to local decision makers on how to affect change, which reflects the participants' aspirations. The Goleta Valley Library used its own version of the Harwood questions to ascertain what the population in the Goleta Valley service area most wants from its library in order to better strategize its service plan in the near and far term. So during the 2019 calendar year, I, supported by 2 library staff members, held 13 Harwood conversations or community ask events. Conversations are the sit-down events where the 10 questions are asked, and community ask situations involve the quick discussion of the 4 questions. And although the Harwood process covered the entire area served by the Goleta Valley Library, we focused particular attention on the Isla Vista community and held conversations with the Isla Vista Elementary School PTA, the Isla Vista Community Service District Board, and local members from the Isla Vista Latinx population. In addition, we hosted a table at several monthly Isla Vista Youth Projects food distribution events where we asked the adults questions and gave books to the children. We did 1 take-home survey with the parents at the Isla Vista Elementary School. By working with all of these groups, we gathered significant data on the public library needs for Isla Vista, especially from the underserved segments of the population who typically are hard to reach through traditional outreach methods. In the handout that you have, there's a table that lists all of the groups that we had conversations with. In total, we spoke with 718 people, mostly in Isla Vista, but also including the Goleta area. And the questions that we asked are appended in your document. Other groups with whom we had interactions include the PTAs from El Camino and Kellogg Elementary Schools, the seniors at Maravilla and the Goleta Valley Community Center, and adults at the Goleta Chamber of Commerce Ambassadors Group, the Goodland Coalition, and the Rancho La Patera Homeowners Association. So I have to say first, before I give you the results, it's really hard to quantify conversations. And so I did create an Excel spreadsheet based on the comments that people made. But what we did not do, and what in retrospect I would probably wish I had done, was take another person with us to count the nods. because what we recorded was, you know, one person would say, you know, it's really important that the summer reading club happen for my, you know, my kids. And so we would record that comment, but we didn't record all of the people who agreed. So our numbers in the spreadsheet are not that high because we weren't somehow capturing all of the people that were agreeing with remarks that were made. And some of the groups were rather large. So I just have to insert that caveat.
Yeah, I think this is Jane. So I think it's also helpful. I know it's an extra cost, but having recordings of conversations and meetings is helpful not only for, you know, the immediate record and, you know, ensuring that there's, you know, a good understanding of what the communication was, but also to archive online. People can go back to it and refresh their memory. So potentially in the future when such conversations are unfolding, whether, you know, it's the City of Goleta staff or somebody that can just record it, post it on YouTube, and make it accessible to all people. Did anybody else have comments? Yes.
For what it's worth, seeing that there's often it's a fundamental sample bias in a lot of these meetings, the idea of really extremely quantifying it and then using the numbers in order to make decisions is not something that I feel was the most valuable way of going about it anyway. So it doesn't really matter that you had issues with that part. So I really appreciated all the qualitative information you managed to put together here. It was actually extremely in-depth. So.
Thank you very much for your comments.
And then I have another question. So just to follow up, so all of these were public conversations, right? All of these conversations you had with community groups were noticed and unfolded in a public forum.
They were not noticed necessarily, no. We sent out letters to every community group we could think of and sent out second and third letters. And if they said yes, then we made arrangements to, yes. Okay, so results over the entire service area. Certain topics immediately rose to prominence regarding what people consider most valuable in terms of library service. The provision of a wide variety of programs, particularly for children and families, is very important to the Goleta Valley Library's service population. And I'm just going to throw in some quotes here and there. We really enjoy the guest speakers who bring animals or play music, stated one participant. The summer reading club is really important, and my kids participate every year, said another. The Chamber of Commerce noted that mobile services would best serve the population that has transportation issues and noted that it's particularly important for lower-income children to receive literacy and library services. So, services to children and families and transportation were really the two top issues that we heard. So let's go into programming. In addition to wanting more programming, and that's, we heard book-themed, holiday crafts, STEM, story time, movies, and literacy, there's a desire for more variety in terms of when the programming is scheduled. Excuse me. People mentioned weekends, evenings, and Sunday mornings as possible program times. However, the library is not currently open on Sunday mornings, so we couldn't accommodate that request. And in the past, when we have attempted to hold children's programs in the evening, we've not experienced significant attendance, but it may be time to revisit that issue. Many people suggested partnering with service area schools and sending notice of programs through the Parent Square database that each school hosts, and we plan to work with the various superintendents to accomplish this. Another thing that came up was bilingual and literacy programming. Bilingual programming for children and adults is considered an important part of any slate of events at the Goleta Valley Library. There were a number of requests for children's conversation groups, so we began offering a biweekly Spanish book discussion group, which is attracting gratifying numbers of native Spanish school-age speakers. Unfortunately, we cannot offer official literacy tutoring for adults at Goleta because it requires, by the state, a full-time staffer and space for materials, training, and teachers and learners. And we simply don't have the staff or the budget. Then seniors programming came up. seniors were interested in more programming, particularly craft-based lectures and outreach to senior housing residences. And interestingly enough, several mentioned that a library podcast talking about different services would be an ideal idea. Programs that we already offer and marketing were a real eye-opener for us. A number of programs that we already offer for children and adults were suggested. For example, several people recommended that we have adult book clubs, when in fact, we've had for many years an annual winter adult reading club. We have a monthly book discussion club, and then annual grant-funded one city, one book style programs like the Book to Action Club. After school tutoring was suggested by seven people, this is something that is currently offered on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And we kept hearing this over and over that we should do things that we've been doing for a really long time, which led to the realization that the library is not doing a sufficient job of advertising its services. We were surprised, especially to hear this from our, you know, power users who are in the library every week and taking advantage of programs and materials. Someone suggested, let people know there's more to the library than books. Another said, let people know what a resource librarians are. So moving forward, we realized that we must establish a plan for better publicizing our services to both users and non-users through a wide variety of formats and outlets. But one person we spoke with reminded us, not everyone's on social media, so remember to publicize your services in non-digital ways as well.
So I have a question. Was there a divide between English speakers and non-English speakers, or was it sort of across the board in terms of the services you offered?
We found this across the board, and it just hit us in the face. It was so frequently, it came up so frequently. So clearly it's a real problem, it's a real failing on our part. In terms of collections, a number of people made comments about the Goleta Valley Library's collections, both physical and downloadable. People are quite satisfied with the children's collection of materials. Some adults would like a greater variety of book titles, although many more stated that they felt that the library has an excellent assortment of materials for adults. The new Library of Things collection was noted by several. There's a distinct preference for physical materials, which is evident in the library's most recent annual circulation statistics. However, there's no doubt that a growing number of people also want downloadable materials in a variety of formats. In addition, while there were many favorable remarks on the collections available for borrowing, people simply want more. One conversation revealed that the speaker appreciated the fact that the Goleta Library space is, quote, functional and practical, with funds spent on books, not fancy architecture. Another person stated, we love that there are lots of books for everyone in the family. In terms of the facility, we heard that the facility requires some attention. Some of the areas mentioned for improvements are the restrooms, outdoor spaces, the need for some quiet spaces, lack of parking, and just general lack of space in the current building. Someone noted that a paint job would be good because the building is bland and blends into its surroundings. We're hoping that our new partnership with the Santa Barbara County Office of Arts and Culture and the use of the front of the library for art installations will help enliven the appearance of the space a little bit. In terms of staff, I'm happy to report that many people said they love the current library, especially remarking on the, quote, the committed library staff that's good with people and clearly interested in helping them. Another stated that the staff know the children's collections and can help my children find the books they need. In terms of Old Town Goleta specifically, the provision of services in Spanish for adults and children, including materials in their native language, programming, and Spanish-speaking library staff are all top priorities of the non-native English speakers in Old Town Goleta. Seniors in Old Town request more services at the community center, such as holds delivery, Library of Things items at that location, and tech tutoring services. Now we'll get into the specifics about Isla Vista. Although we did not go into the Harwood process specifically to understand only what the library needs are for the Isla Vista community, county supervisors asked the city to prioritize that issue. Therefore, 7 of our 14 Harwood interactions took place in Isla Vista. At those conversations, we interacted with over 600 people, by far the majority of people with whom we conversed through the Harwood process. The number of Isla Vista residents with whom we conducted conversations, asks, and surveys gives staff a large data set from which to assess future options for service to that community service district. We found that a large number of Isla Vista families do use the Goleta Valley Library. Yay, we love the library, commented one. I really like the Goleta Valley Library setup. It's so kid-friendly. This is the standard for a great library setting, stated one of the Ivy Elementary School families. Another said that her family uses the library, but not regularly, because they utilize the elementary school library each week. Many remarked very favorably about the library at the Isla Vista Elementary School and how it fills their needs for library materials and programming. Others remarked that they did not use the Goleta Valley Library due to transportation issues. As discussed more thoroughly below, we had hoped to receive more decisive direction from the residents of IV in terms of their library service priorities. However, we did gain an understanding of what is important to them. They want access to materials, programs for children, and a way to bring those things to those who do not have their transportation. Service in Isla Vista presents some curious challenges. While approximately 90% of the population is attending university or community college, most of the remaining 10% are Latinx and/or young families. As stated earlier, there is an excellent school library at the Ivy Elementary School that remains open after school each day. They offer after-school tutoring and a morning homework club. Many of the families who have transportation report that they currently do use the Goleta Valley Library regularly. For those without transportation, a different picture emerges. Because there is no regular MTD service between IV and the area of Goleta in which the library is situated, it's almost impossible for those without transportation to use the library. So we asked people about three types of library service, and 44% of the people responded that they would prefer, a mobile model of library services because it would be bringing the library to their neighborhoods. They would still have a transportation issue if there was a branch in Isla Vista. I would prefer having a bookmobile because my family doesn't drive, said one mom. Another stated, I would prefer to have a bookmobile that would visit us every 2 weeks with books, toys, and other materials. I think a bookmobile would be helpful with different available hours, said another respondent. It would make returning books a lot easier. Another survey respondent stated, I prefer having a bookmobile that stops at the elementary school. 40% of respondents preferred that a physical location be established in Isla Vista. One respondent desires a branch library just like the Goleta Valley Library, which we love for its lovely collection of books for children. Access to easy parking is a must, according to Ivy Elementary School survey respondents. One person said, I would like a branch that has all educative support programs for kids. Another respondent said she would like a branch with digital access to sources such as the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and local news publications. And I do just want to add that all Black Gold libraries do currently offer remote, full-text online access to the New York Times. The key takeaway is that some respondents would like a significant library presence in Isla Vista, which includes a physical location that provides services more akin to a full-service library like the existing Goleta branch. However, unless additional ongoing funding is identified, providing a full-service branch in Isla Vista would require significant ongoing expenditures, which would mean that services provided at the current Goleta Valley Library would likely need to be reduced in some way. The third option, transportation services, some 14% of people stated that they also wanted MTD service as an option, so they could not only visit the library, but the shops along Calle Real. Someone indicated, we've got a really cool library over there, meaning the Goleta Valley Library, and I want the local kids to go out there. The city of Goleta has been working for 2 years with MTD to try to get a direct route between Ivy and the library, but MTD projected it would not be sustainable. Instead, as of autumn 2020, MTD is piloting a program for on-demand micro-transit van service, which would feature 2 pickup points in Isla Vista and drop people off directly at the Goleta Valley Library, as well as other points in Goleta. It's almost like an Uber, but by van, and it's a pretty interesting prospect. Other priorities that arose. The Harwood conversation with the Isla Vista Community Services District Board resulted in the expression of a desire for a number of specific services, such as loanable textbooks for all UCSB courses, a more scholarly library, family programming, and resources for the homeless. The IVCSD conversation led to a top 3 list that prioritized services for children, particularly from low-income families, textbooks, and transportation. Now, it must be said that public libraries generally do not carry college textbooks, as the expense is significant. The space required for housing them is considerable, and courses and textbook titles change from year to year. So it's not really a practical consideration for a public library, unfortunately. A suggestion was made for the library to remain open overnight during UCSB's final weeks to allow students to have much needed quiet space for study. And this is something that we are definitely going to consider and seek some, perhaps some grant funding for. One person said, I feel strongly that we need to have as many services as possible here in the community. And we agree. So in response to the Harwood process, it gave library administration a great deal of data on which to base a plan for moving ahead. Numerous next steps were identified as described below. There were easy fixes. There are changes that we've been able to institute already, such as creating the Children's Spanish Book Discussion Group that I mentioned earlier. There are other suggestions that can be short-term goals, and the need for creating a robust marketing plan is certainly a key takeaway from the process. Long-term goals. We can investigate improvements to the library building that would allow for increased services, including housing additional circulating materials and the ability to offer additional programming should funding be available to staff them. And in terms of Isla Vista, we must explore the options and cost for providing mobile services or a physical location in the short and long term. If neither is financially feasible, then we must creatively explore ways to meet as many of the needs expressed by Isla Vista residents as possible with available resources. And at the end of the report, I appended a table giving you just the top 3 issues given to us by age range. So people that were between 20 and 30 years old, their top 3 issues were programming for children, quiet space for reading, studying, working, and loanable textbooks for all UCSB courses. People in the between the ages of 30 and 40 years, their top 3 were programming for children, more varied and numerous collections, and community partnerships, particularly in Isla Vista. And then because none of us dared to try and assess if someone was in their 40s or 50s, we clumped them together. So people between the ages of 40 and 60, their top 3 were themed learning programs and lectures for adults, be open more hours, and do more outreach and community partnering. And then for those 60 and up, they wanted us to do more outreach and publicity, keep doing the book sale in the lobby, and keep building the Library of Things collection. So as a result of the Harwood process, we began investigating some possibilities for service in Isla Vista. And we came up with four options, which we are exploring. And I was asked to create budgets for these four options. And I can either start going into these right now, or I can answer questions about the Harwood report first.
Are there questions at all?
I've read them both. So
yeah, but, okay.
I've got many questions about the second half.
Okay. So first, I just wanted to say thank you for that presentation, and I really appreciated the summary. I think it was very succinct. I don't have any questions. Anyone else? No? Okay, so let's go to the second part of that.
Okay, so we listened to what we heard, and so we looked at mobile services, physical location, so I'm going to talk about each one as we go through each option. So the first option we looked at was a bookmobile, the size of a bus, basically. And so, because that's what we all think of when we think of mobile libraries, is a bookmobile. And so I investigated the cost and spoke with the state library, spoke with bookmobile vendors around the country, talked with libraries who have bookmobiles, I have to say that right now, mobile library services are at the highest peak of interest countrywide and actually internationally than they've ever been. So they used to be sort of big in the 60s and then they faded away. But now interest is at a peak, and the State Library of California is doing a special grant this year. They've put aside $3 million of Institute of Museum and Library Service money for bookmobile or mobile library grant funding.
Can I interject and just ask, do we know what that trend is related to? Has there been any discussion or questioning around that?
It started in Australia and has been working so well there that it kind of came over to the States, and it seems to be slightly more sustainable than a branch for many places, and it solves that issue of what do you do about people who don't have their own transportation.
And it eliminates the operation and maintenance with a physical structure and sort of reduces it. Is that?
Well, there's still operation and maintenance, but yes, it has different costs involved.
Okay. Questions? No. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jay.
We'll verify you're asking now for questions. I mean, are you done presenting this option? I should.
No.
No. Okay.
No.
No. She's not. I just had a question about the trend overall and if we had any sort of understanding of where that came from.
So what we did was estimate the one-time costs for purchasing the bookmobile and the all of the elements that we would want to have included with it, along with the materials, the laptop computers, software licenses, and such. And we estimate that those costs would be $352,175. And then we looked at insurance, gasoline, maintenance, cleaning, all of that. We would have a full-time staff member dedicated to it. And then we would add additional materials. There would be pop-up programming involved so that we would set up tables at the stops, and we'd be able to do children's programming. We'd be able to do tech tutoring and all of that stuff. So all of the materials associated with that, the services that would be associated with Black Gold, costs for that, and then support time and materials. That's just time that the city would have to spend in terms of payroll and all of that stuff. So for the cost of the one-time things and then operation for the first year, the total would be approximately $495,222. We would apply to the state for a $99,000 grant and hope that we would get that. We would need to find a community partner to contribute $19,800 toward the purchase of the bookmobile, which would bring the total cost of the first year of operation down to $387,715. We did not include to the budget the annual depreciation cost of the bookmobile, so that is not included in this budget.
Okay, but that $200,000from the California State Library is applicable towards that, right? And that's a constant that needs to be expended by 2022, correct? Okay. So are there questions on option one? Okay, Commissioner Peck and Jay?
Go ahead, Jay.
So I was looking into prices of that, not prices, costs that were being spent by some other libraries on bookmobiles, and the numbers are old. And so I'm really curious. So like in 2013 and around like 2011, there were a number of references for it being about $200,000, and actually remarkably close. The different libraries would take exact numbers, and then people saying the average is $200,000, and also that the lifetime of such were usually 15 years. And so I was curious to know. I mean, just I could see inflation, all sorts of reasons, maybe new regulations on things that might have increased the price to up to nearly $300, actually, well, including tax over, but the price, the base price, nearly $300,000, and also the lifetime for depreciation, you've decreased down to 5 years, and that was, I guess, the most surprising thing is just do these wear out a lot faster now, or
that's the city's policy on basically any materials that you buy is a 5-year depreciation. So, but again, that's not included in the budget. But no, the bookmobiles now are much more expensive than that. This was the least expensive one that I could find that still fit, fit in terms of everything that we needed. And they have much more in terms of computer, wireless, all of that stuff. So compared to 2013, you're expecting a lot more detailing. They have a powered lift, carts, awning, monitor, wireless router, the graphics, the delivery. Many times they didn't include the delivery in the past. You had to go and pick them up from Kansas, whatever. There are no California companies that make bookmobiles. They tend to be more in the Midwest. So yes, they are quite expensive. And also because they are so popular now, there's a great demand for them.
So is the model with the bookmobile that it would be traveling around, like a schedule, like a route, like what is the, how do people get to the bookmobile, like find where the bookmobile is?
Right. There would be a schedule. When I first got to Goleta in 2008, there actually was a bookmobile here. Unfortunately, it had been emptied out by the time I got here, but I've looked at the historical data and there was schedule, and every 3 weeks it would return to the same places. It would post the schedule at those places, and it would stay for about 2-3 hours at each place, do programs, provide materials for checkout, make library cards, things like that. So, but I think we would probably want to do a schedule where we would go more frequently to each place than 3 weeks, because one of the places that we would want to go to is, I'm having a senior moment. The Manor, the senior citizens.
Friendship Manor,
thank you. And drop-off holds. So we would probably go there once a week. But yes, you would have a posted schedule. You would make sure that you posted at each site. So we would go to the elementary school in Ivy. We would go to Ivy Youth, your preschool. We would
Which
go
isn't
to...
in Ivy.
There's the rub.
So wait, let's just. So we had Commissioner Freeman, Commissioner Peck, and okay. Then Commissioner Goodman. So, just.
So
are you done, Commissioner Vice Chair Creeman?
So this is something that we're running full time, and that's hence the and hence the full time library assistant.
That yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And questions I have right now. Thank you.
So if I read this correctly, slightly more people wanted a mobile than wanted a library and IV.
Yes, that's correct.
44% to 40%. That's kind of an interesting finding, and also that the mobile costs more than a fixed branch and IV, which is also an interesting finding. That's just an observation. There's an item about outreach and partnering, and if we're getting into this level of financial commitment, I think we need help, and we have to explore that. And the low-hanging fruit here, easy for me to say, would probably be the PR side, which is, and I don't know where our mission statement is before the council, but we could put together a piece of literature around that statement and about the values of the library and some contact information, give it out to all the schools in Goleta and in IV, the senior centers, the community centers, and I think that would be relatively inexpensive. I'm really responding, in addition to a digital strategy, but I'm really responding to the people who said digital is not enough. And so that I think would be easy. If I could switch, though, for a minute from the financial.
Want to make sure that we have four options. Right now we're drilling into option one. I don't want to vacillate too much between things.
Good.
But if you want to go back to the overall Harwood conversation, that's fine.
No, I want to go somewhere else, but I'll wait until we finish this.
Okay. Because I think we want to explore every option in detail, if that's my understanding.
I did have a question about a couple of the questions in the Harwood, but I can hold that until Lori speaks.
Mine is also a Harwood.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So I'll continue then.
I had a question. This is not a fiscal question. I'm just trying to find the pages now. We didn't really talk too much about the first couple of questions in the study, which were, what are your aspirations for the library, and what are your main concerns relative to achieving the library you want? There's a lot of anecdotal information here, but I'm curious if you found, those are pretty global questions, and I'm curious what you found when you asked those two questions.
People were generally not interested in getting too philosophical. They were interested in telling us exactly what they wanted. You know, more programs, more books, more downloadables, things like that. They wanted to be very practical and specific.
Thank you, Commissioner Goodman.
So I'm curious how you defined Isla Vista for the purposes of this survey. And then when you think about service in Isla Vista, what does that mean?
We generally just think of anything called Isla Vista as Isla Vista.
Right, but on a map, let's say. Yeah. What does that look like?
Isla Vista Community Services District, essentially. I believe that's what we get the per capita for.
So the boundary of the IV's community, the IVCSD.
I believe that's where we get the per capita income for. Yeah, so I could be wrong about that.
Let's Commissioner Goodman go, and then Vice Chair Freeman, you can go.
One of the things I've discovered in my 2 years serving this community and has been my own marketing effort is that when we look at the Isla Vista Elementary School, most of those children don't live in Isla Vista proper. The families, they live all the way up to the freeway, up Los Carneros and up Stork. I'm not saying they shouldn't be served. I'm going to be very curious for the census to see what the population of Isla Vista proper is. When we think about Isla Vista in general, it sort of includes university land. It includes, and I said my children's center is on Phelps. It's right across from Costco, and the other one's on the West Campus, which is on university-owned land. So I guess I'm thinking also that something like a van, Isla Vista itself is very small. It's 1.5 mile square, but perhaps there are other areas within our community that aren't as well served as we hope they would be. So I know there's a political pull for Isla Vista, and, you know, I certainly support that. And full time in Isla Vista seems like a lot for one half square mile when there are plenty of underserved families that don't live in Isla Vista proper. So that's just, I'm just kind of thinking that even where, like, what we called Isla Vista in the survey may or may not have been people living in Isla Vista.
Vice Chair Freeman.
For what's worth on that topic, I had assumed, even though it was, just option one was Bookmobile, and option two was like Isla Vista Branch, and option three was Isla Vista Library Room. I assumed that option one was not Isla Vista Bookmobile, mm-hmm. but that option one was Bookmobile.
Right.
And so
maybe
anywhere
a day
there
a
is,
week or 2 days a week.
Yeah, so it's possible that, yeah, depending on what the, yeah. To rewind a bit to the earlier thing I wanted to provide some clarity on is that, so Isla Vista as a, like a term is really awkward. So the Isla Vista Community Service District has a, like a bounding box that's a rectangle, but it has holes in it because the university properties don't count for that area. And those are large buildings with a lot of people. So the population of the Isla Vista Community Service District is notably smaller than the population of the Isla Vista Recreation and Parks District, even though they're both the same rectangle. And then the census defines Isla Vista as including the entire university. And so the Isla Vista census designated place is awkward for that reason standpoint. So if you want to be able to get the population of the rectangle, like minus the university students, like they're like on campus residents, you have to go to the individual census tracts and like rebuild that information from the ground up. But so I'm not certain when you say that you have population information, whether you actually got it from our general manager about our tax rolls, or whether you got it from like the Wikipedia, or whether you got it from the census, and they all give you different results.
Then I was incorrect. We do receive per capita funding for the students at Isla Vista, and that. So I believe that the census area of Isla Vista is the per capita area that we get funding for.
Right, but it sounds like the Harwood conversations extended well beyond that geographic area into different portions of the community. I mean, Phelps is in the city of Goleta. It's not in an unincorporated area. It's within the confines of the city of Goleta. So there, again, you have, you know, this one term not being coterminous with whatever is mapped, and so, you know, you're kind of bobbling around in space and time, and so that's difficult.
You didn't do anything.
Yeah, it's not about you. It's not about you.
This is crazy.
Yeah, yeah. We're not working with the same definitions, obviously. My mic's on.
I can hear that.
Yeah, I usually can project my voice really well.
The county supervisors have told us that we need to provide service to Isla Vista, and they mean a broad area geographically.
Right.
So that is what we investigated.
No, I appreciate that. And you've done a tremendous job. I think you and your staff have done a tremendous job. I think we're quibbling here about you know, the inability to really have a common understanding of what Isla Vista means. That has nothing to do with you. That's just, unfortunately, IV is thrown around as this amorphous community. And that is sort of problematic when we're trying to define what needs are for a particular community. Commissioner Peck, did you have a comment?
Along that line, I think we may have buried the lead. Congratulations on all the positive
experiences. Yeah.
People really seem to like the library a lot.
You've got to turn it on.
Right. People seem to really like the library. People really seem to be very responsive to it. And if we have this little marketing mix up, that's okay too. We can fix that. So I think that I just wanted to register the top line finding is very good. So congratulations.
Yeah, I agree. Commissioner Goodman.
So here's my question. If you are not getting any pressure from the supervisors, but you were evaluating the needs of the community served by the Goleta Valley Library, which certainly includes Isla Vista, how well are we serving all the various areas, ethnicities, economic abilities, you know, the entire, you know, Goleta Valley, since it's the Goleta Valley Library? Were there holes that you would have identified if you didn't have the supervisors defining where what you were looking at. You know, are people from the Elwood area, for example, using the library?
I believe the greatest challenge is that there are people who have a lack of ability to get to the library. So I believe the lack of transportation is the biggest challenge to service to any part for people from any part of our service area.
So then do you think having services go to people in disparate areas of the very large community that we live in? I mean, it's only 4% difference between a physical location and a bookmobile, but is that sort of what you heard? I mean, apart from just what you've recorded, what words, what did you hear? What did you see with the nods?
I believe I put in the report that transportation was one of the top three concerns for most everyone. So if we could get back to the options.
Yep, go ahead.
That would be great. Because option two, I want to explain a full service branch to you. Currently, right now, the county supervisors that are on this ad hoc county library commission, those county supervisors are Doss Williams and John Hartman, are involved with the four zone library directors and a facilitation company in establishing minimum standards for the county public libraries and trying to come up with some solution to the chronic underfunding of these libraries. I based the funding for a full service branch on the information that we have been establishing in this committee. So in case you're wondering where my numbers came from, they're based on what this county committee has been setting as minimum standards for a population such as Isla Vista, which our per capita for Isla Vista is about 32,000 people. So yes, most of them are UCSB. So because of, which is, has a great library. So because of that number, the library would need to be open 5 days a week. And so we figured out that would be a total of 41 and a half open hours. And the staff would need just a half hour each morning to get ready for opening. And we put the one-time startup costs of all the equipment, the shelving, building improvements that may need to occur, furniture, all of that stuff, staff circulation desk, security system, all of those things. And the one-time startup cost for that would be about $116,715. And then the rent was really hard to assess because there's not a lot of property in Isla Vista, so I wasn't able to get a true per square footage. I contacted rental agencies, and it was basically a guess. But the minimum standard requires a full-time librarian and two staff members on at all open hours. So that's why there are four staff members. And then all of the costs that would be associated with the branch. And so the total cost for the first year would be $432,336. There are several possible costs not included in the budget, landscaping, leasing of parking lot space, and then compliance with ADA. Answering your questions.
So this is a lovely fantasy. There's no parking lot space. There's no rental space. If there were building space, they'd build more housing because that's the number one issue. I mean, this is a lovely idea that is complete fantasy. So that's my thoughts on this one. But thank you for doing all the work on it.
Vice Chair Freeman.
So I have a question about this idea of a minimum standards is to verify, and I feel like the existence of option three tells me that, might tell me the answer to this question already, but, and it's not a suggestion, I'm just the way I'm going to phrase this question is because I'm structured, this is the way that I can structurally ask the question I'm trying to ask. If you build something that did not meet the minimum standards, would it be allowed or is it like illegal? Like there's like a minimum legal standard or is it?
No, it would be allowed.
Okay.
Would it be sufficient?
Yeah, that's yeah. And then I've got a question actually for Lori. It's related to like the usefulness of an Isla Vista full service branch, and it kind of ties back to something that had been mentioned during the earlier Harwood conversations. And I direct this question to Lori because it's a question about very specifically families with little kids. And so the comment had been about even in Isla Vista having a single fixed location being limited in the sense that they would still have to have transportation to that. And as somebody who is older and lives in Isla Vista, I think of it as this tiny little region and I just walk across it quickly. But a family with kids, is the idea that they really need a car to get somewhere in order to, like, if you're on the other side, or are they able to?
No, if you're a family, if you have a small child, you can walk Isla Vista.
Okay.
You can't necessarily get over to Fairview. That's, you know, far, you're going over the freeway. But if you live, you know, sort of near Ivy Elementary and you need to come over to the youth center or you need to come to the community center, you can do that. Might take you 15 minutes, but yeah, okay. People walk all the time.
Then I guess I've, so when that was coming up in the Harwood questions about, or the Harwood responses about people who, transportation either being an issue within Isla Vista, what was that really about?
People were just expressing that if they have large families or a number of young children, it would be too difficult for them to corral them all on a walk to the library and then walking home with a bunch of materials.
Okay, but then is that in, again, Isla Vista proper in the little, you know, I mean, that's a legitimate question, I think, in the little, you know, square or rectangle area that we've defined as IV, or was that also what you heard in other portions of the Goleta Valley?
That's for anyone that has transportation issues.
I think if you're dealing with multiple children, young children, if you have a family with four children, that is hard.
Yeah.
We walk our kids from Phelps to the youth center for a health fair, and they can walk it, and they're three. But that's not a family trying to have a two-year-old and a five-year-old. And so the distance is not the problem. It's the reality of family life, which is going to be an issue for anyone with transportation. And unless you're going to people's homes, you're going to have to come up with a location for something. It's not the home book mobile, as far as I know.
Right, but, you know, going across streets laden with books for kids, three, it's a lot. It's unruly, and especially if you're trying to encourage them to do something, which might not be something they want to do. So it's, yeah, I get that. Okay, so any questions on option two? Any more questions on that? Okay, option three.
We were offered a very small office space in the building that used to be where the IVCSD offices were. And a very small office space with a little office off that. And so that's where we base this budget on. It's a county office space, and we were told that the rent would be $11,000 a year. So that's where we based this budget. And it's on the second floor of that building in the back of the building. Because of ADA rules...
I was just going to say, is it ADA accessible?
There is an elevator in the back of the building. But because of ADA rules, it would fit maybe two tables and a small desk for checking out. But at best, you could possibly do a story time in there if you pushed the tables against the wall and had maybe five kids. It would be a difficult space to work with. You could install shelving against the walls, but I'm not sure how many books you would be able to get in there. But you could create, but it would definitely not be a library. It would be a library room. So we estimated that cost, and that would be for the first year of service, $252,546. The main concern there is that there's not a lot of parking, and concern with being compliant with the ADA. It's a pretty small space.
Vice Chair Freeman.
I think it's worth pointing out that the rent for county office space for this tiny little room is $11,000, which demonstrates why Lori and I were laughing at the rent for the library being $18,000.
But additionally, they raise the rent 5% every year, no matter what the COLA is or anything else. So.
On your mic.
They raise the rent 5% every year, no matter what.
So the thought with you being able to do a story time and such a thing, I actually then would wonder about the ability to just use our community room as a meeting place in order to essentially have like a mobile story time. So you could essentially send story time into IV, you know, once a month or 2 months or something, whatever makes sense.
Right. Yeah, that's an idea.
And yeah, the ADA thing hits hard because I do feel like a lot of the thought processes that people had been expressing had been, well, why can't you just put some books in this little room here? And the legal ramifications of such a thing actually are quite difficult. I appreciate that.
So. Must be considered.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Okay. Option four, please.
Okay. So option four was what I came up with. In case we decided that a bookmobile was not economically feasible, how could we best combine all the as many of the services that people requested as we could in a blending of mobile and physical locations? And so a lot of libraries have done really well with a mobile van. And it allows you to essentially have a small bookmobile, provide pop-up programming, bring materials for checkout, bring holds materials, bring computers and Library of Things materials, do on-the-spot story times and craft programs and tech tutoring, things like that. So that's the option here. And we believe we would be able to get a grant, one of the mobile library grants for this. And the Friends have already said that they would be our community partner in that. So that's why I put the cost of the van in green, because we don't feel that we would actually have to pay for that. So the first time cost would probably be about $62,000 for everything that we would want to get. We would purchase four. They have book vending machines, and we would put those at four different locations where we felt that they would see the most use. We would also purchase 10 large freestanding little libraries and put those in various areas. Particularly, we were thinking about some of the apartment complexes where large populations of Latinx families live. And we would restock those using the vans on a weekly basis. We would install three indoor and one outdoor book drops, because we did get the comment that it would be nice if there were book drops in Isla Vista to make it easier to return items. Let's see, I think that's it for the items that we would be purchasing. And then we would use two part-timers to create in essence, a full-timer, so that would be running on a full-time basis throughout the area. Again, Friendship Manor, the elementary school, And that would allow us to have enough salary to run this for 2 years without touching in on our current budget. And yeah, so that's our fourth option.
Commissioner Peck?
Are these vans leasable?
Can you use your mic?
I'm sorry.
Are these vans leasable?
I just actually watched a webinar this afternoon where Sacramento leases theirs, so I am going to investigate that.
Vice Chair Freeman?
So I really enjoyed the ingenuity of this approach and the fact that there were a lot of little parts. And part of the reason I really enjoyed that, and it sounds like you put a lot of thought into this and talk to some community partners, and so it's, thank you for doing that. One of the things I actually also like extra liked about it is that one can imagine doing some of these and then kind of building up and ramping up and then doing other ones and then doing things and on the, like four vending machines. You could try a vending machine and then see if people use the vending machine then before you buy the second vending machine. And a lot of this made sense to me in this kind of incremental rollout approach. And particularly then, a lot of the budget overlapped with the budget for upgrading the van to a bookmobile because of a lot of the MiFi and the software licenses and various things seemed like they were the same kind of thing, just you put it in the bigger vehicle in case we ever wanted to, as the library, get the full bookmobile. And I like the fact that the van, it had the property of the bookmobile, that it's not limited to the people who can walk within the half square mile area, but you can send the van off in order to other places. And since the van is cheap, you might be able to, for certain kinds of services, get cheaper than the bookmobile, I mean. You might be able to have two vans that might actually be able to, so you can bring in, a part-time employee or something in order to be able to have a second van service limited something. There were a lot of interesting things to me of this option. And the one thing that gives me this weird pause, though, is that we do have this apparent $200,000 California State Library grant related to Ivy services that then kind of swamps almost I think of the incremental approach, and it's without that, it's okay, we'll start with $10,000 expenditure here and $20,000 expenditure here, and it's no, gee, you have to spend $200,000 by 2022, and it's okay, well. But
yeah. Commissioner Peck?
Well, I also like this approach. I think it limits, to be a little, just a teeny bit more negative, even though I like it, it also limits the exposure. If people don't show up, it's a Field of Dreams thing, and if they don't come, then you can cut your losses, especially if it's leasable. I have one small question about do people in the van, in a Ford Transit van, do people go, you say there's four laptops, do people go in it and sit there, or are they coming and going?
No, it would not be a van where people would be going in, because then you would have to make it handicapped accessible, which would bring up the cost incrementally. So what we would do is we would have the materials come out of the van. We would have a shade attached to the van that would come down. We'd bring tables, set up the tables, have carts with materials.
Commissioner Goodman, any comments?
I think this is a great idea. I think it's much more feasible. And I just to respond to if it doesn't work out, you're not out. I do want to encourage whatever you try to realize it takes a long time to build relationships with people. So the investment of 2 years or 3 years, you need to invest that amount of time to get this going. And I think a mobile van will help with marketing for the library as well. So when you look at your other finding, which is that people just don't know what you're doing, a van with a logo on it, and I can just see lots of opportunity for being out in the community. And then really learning about what the needs are in Isla Vista, because you're providing it and seeing what people respond to.
So I too like this option. I like that it's scalable. I like that you know, there's an opportunity to get into the community, build those relationships and build up some trust, and then possibly, you know, ramp up the services should we do that. And we do have this $200,000, so we're not eating up the whole budget, but we can incrementally increase it over that 2-year period. So I think this is a great scalable approach. Anything else?
Okay, well, thank you for all of your input. We will be bringing this in front of the City Council on March 17th.
Thank you. Okay. Any other future agenda items that we'd like to discuss? Okay, thank you all for being here, and I will adjourn the meeting. Thanks.
A tribe. Strangely enough, I got along without him. Then one day, he passed me right by.